From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes, executive editor of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show today are Tim Mack, senior correspondent for the Daily Beast, and Oren Durell, foreign affairs reporter for USA Today. And here are the issues. Donald Trump, a real estate developer who had never before run for political office, is now the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. He is considered an underdog, however, in the general election to Hillary Clinton, the likely Democratic nominee. In Turkey, Prime Minister Davutoglu was forced out of office by the president, and chaos in Iraq threatens to weaken the fight against Islamic State. Well, the big news is, Tim, is Donald Trump going to win unless there's some unheard-of event at the moment? It will be the Republican nominee. Ted Cruz dropped out, and John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, dropped out. They were his last two foes. What about this? Here he is. We got 2 months to go before the Republican National Convention. Can Donald Trump really unify this party and bring Republicans together? It doesn't look real good for him on that count.
No, and you see a lot of prominent conservative writers saying they'll refuse to back Donald Trump. You've got Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, a leading Republican and second in line to the presidency in the line of secession, saying that he is not ready to support Donald Trump right now. You've got a lot of chaos in this party. Mm-hmm. And even though they have decided on their nominee, I think just as many people in the party are unwilling to support him as are willing to support him.
But don't you think it will start to pick up some steam as we head toward the convention and Republicans get reconciled to Donald Trump? It's hard for them, I know. Yeah. I mean, here's some guy who's never been a part of the party. He didn't register as a Republican until 2012.
And he said all these offensive things.
Many offensive things, yes. He's certainly not a standard conservative. He's conservative on some things.
Yes, well, power has a very mystifying way of getting people to come around to your position. And you do see a lot of members of Congress now thinking twice about whether or not they're going to back Donald Trump. After all, in many states across this country, Donald Trump won the Republican primary, whether in their district or in their state, by overwhelming margins. And he has shown consistently in every region of the country that he can win amongst different demographics, mm-hmm. whether it's someone with less education, more education, an individual in urban areas, suburban areas, or rural areas. He's been able to cut across a lot of these traditional things that we'd imagine would mm-hmm. divide support between candidates.
Oren, what about Donald Trump? What's your take on him and where he stands in putting his party together?
I think he's got his work cut out for him. But like Tim says, there have been a list of very prominent Republican leaders and former presidents who have come out, who said that they won't endorse him. Mitt Romney, the former presidential nominee of the Republican Party, George W. Bush, his father, George Bush, both presidents, they've all come out and said that they won't vote for him. Some sitting senators, Sass, I think he's in Nebraska, mm-hmm. said that he won't support him. But some people are coming around. Rick Perry of Texas, the governor who was a former opponent mm-hmm. of Trump's, has come out and endorsed him. Richard Burr, who's a respected senator in North Carolina, has endorsed him, and others have too. So I think we'll have to see. A lot of Republicans aren't comfortable with some of his mm-hmm. policies. He said that he might not cut taxes as much as he had intended, as he had said originally. He's made comments, saying that he supports a woman's right to choose an abortion in the past, mm-hmm. and just recently he came out and said that the whole hoopla over what bathroom transgender mm-hmm. people use is not something that he's going to get involved in.
Mm-hmm. And well, that's probably a good idea on his part, not to get involved anyway. It's an issue that you're not going to make much headway on if you're running for president.
Well, that may be true, but from a conservative Republican family values mm-hmm. type of party,
sure.
he's not carrying mm-hmm. the standard, as Paul Ryan said, mm-hmm. that many of the Republicans, the family values mm-hmm. Republicans would expect them to carry.
Here's what I think is a part of the problem for Trump, Tim, and that is that it's going to have to be Trump himself to really unify the party, and I think he believes that the party needs to unify around him. That he's not the guy that has to do that. He's going to be the nominee. It's up to Republicans to start gathering around him. Now, he's talking to some of them, but it doesn't look, and I've talked to people in his campaign, it certainly doesn't look like they're going to make anytime soon, a really strong effort to go and bring Republicans in, and which, as Orrin said, some are meandering in. Mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, and Kelly Ayotte, the senator from New Hampshire, and there are others, but it's not happening overwhelmingly. You know, you would have been in another case of another more standard Republican. After he became, it was clear that he was going to win the nomination, the endorsements would flood in. They're not flooding in, they're trickling in.
Yeah, well, as someone who has never been a politician before, who doesn't have this traditional network of supporters on Capitol Hill or in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. he is really struggling to get people to back him. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's never been a particularly humble individual. And I'm sure mm-hmm. that winning the Republican nomination after these many months of duking it out with, you know, a dozen and a half other opponents has not added to that humility. but I do think –
I love understatement.
I do think that over the next few weeks you'll see some outreach to Capitol Hill. He has a mm-hmm. very small cadre of supporters on the Hill, and I think they're making some efforts for outreach, and you'll see mm-hmm. him go up to Capitol Hill and meet mm-hmm. with some wary mm-hmm. Republicans.
Let's take a short break here, and we'll get back to other aspects of Donald Trump and his nomination as a Republican presidential candidate. But we'll be right back with more issues in the news.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Welcome back to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes with Orrin Durrell and Tim Mack. Orrin, I interrupted you, and now you have the mic.
I was just going to say that we have to be very careful not to, once again, to underestimate Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He's now in the general election, and I don't think that he sees his mission as pulling in the Republicans. I think mm-hmm. he sees his mission as winning the election, and that means taking away voters from Hillary Clinton. The negative ads have already begun. This is going to be a very nasty and brutal campaign with a lot of negativity, and he's going to be looking for the angry American voters who are upset with the federal government and who feel like they've been left out. And those voters are in both parties. And that's who he's going for. Some of the people who are supporting Bernie Sanders, he's looking for a lot of the economic discontents, I guess, of the United States, to whom his message appeals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as the Republicans are concerned, he's going to ask them, well, who else have you got?
Mm-hmm. You know, this is a point Orrin raised, and Trump talks about all the time. You know, everybody said I had no chance to win the nomination. They said I'd never get to 30% of the vote in the primary, and then 40%, then 50%. And then in some of the recent primaries, he got to 60% of the vote, which is pretty impressive. And he has been underestimated. So, Tim, the question I'm getting to is, how does he stand against Hillary Clinton? I'm assuming that she's going to win the Democratic presidential nomination against Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont. But, of course, Sanders is still in there, and he won the Indiana primary just last week against her. The latest polls have shown – there was a CNN poll that showed him Hillary ahead of Trump 54-41%. Others have shown it closer, but all the credible polls show Hillary ahead.
Yeah, well, we're very early in this process still. There's going to be, like you said, a lot of scorched earth. There's going to be a lot of attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Be prepared for some real ugliness and, mm-hmm. and personal attacks flying back and forth, and mm-hmm. probably mostly from Donald Trump. Donald mm-hmm. Trump starts this general election campaign with some of the highest negative ratings from the electorate that we've seen from any presidential mm-hmm. candidate in recent memory. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but the one advantage that he has is that his opponent, Hillary Clinton, is not a particularly loved individual by the electorate either. Now, she has some real issues among the American public with the issue of trust.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask the American public who they trust more, to handle the economy, especially in Rust Belt states, mm-hmm. and among working class voters, they say Donald Trump. There are some angles in which Donald Trump can try to maneuver himself into the White House. It's mm-hmm. not impossible. Mm-hmm. It's still unlikely, given mm-hmm. how favorable the electorate in general looks at him. But mm-hmm. if he can start changing that and focus on some of these working class concerns, draw away perhaps some of the Bernie Sanders supporters that mm-hmm. he's been obviously mm-hmm. and very publicly angling for, mm-hmm. there is a chance. There mm-hmm. is a chance he could be president.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned it over, and I'm still sort of chuckling at the idea of supporters of Bernie Sanders, a socialist, backing Donald Trump, who he may not be a conservative, but he certainly is a capitalist. There's no question about that, and it's not impossible. But one of the most unusual presidential coalitions, though I would say the most unusual presidential coalition that I've come across. And I mean, I've only been covering this stuff for 40 years, but I haven't seen anything like this. It's a potential coalition. I take it, the possibility seriously, as I think you do.
Yeah, I think that he may be able to shave some of them off. Probably not all of them. Certainly not all of them. On the other hand, if you talk about coalitions, Hillary, despite, and I agree with Tim, that she has a lot of negatives. She has a history at the State Department. She has a history, you know, as First Lady. She has a history as a Clinton. I mean, she has a lot of things probably going against her, but she also has a lot of allies. You know, because of the types of things that Trump has said about women and the types of things that he has said about Hispanics and Muslims, minorities in this country, many, many women are going to be voting for Hillary. And if they vote, they're going to be voting for Hillary. So, you know, if you talk about a coalition, you look at the Barack Obama is going to be campaigning for her. He's going to bring his people out. Her husband, Bill Clinton, former president, he's going to be campaigning for her. And he's very popular in certain sectors, especially among African Americans. Eventually, I think that Bernie Sanders will also be coming around and campaigning for her and telling people that she's the least bad candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you talk about coalitions. It kind of looks like right now, it looks like Hillary should have the coalition, but there's still a possibility that Trump can turn things around. We'll see.
Okay, what about this? I know with another campaign has gotten to this, but what kind of a vice president does Donald Trump need, Tim? He does show very poorly against women. About in some polls, 70% of women say they view Trump unfavorably. Does he pick a woman? Does that help? Does he pick somebody who is particularly in line with conservative Republicans, many of whom are not supporting him? What do you think?
I mean, obviously, he needs to find a woman who's willing to be on the ticket with him.
Well, there is that.
And already we've got Governor Martinez of New Mexico, who I'm sure has mm-hmm. A few problems with the things that mm-hmm. he's had to say about Hispanics. We have Governor Nikki Haley, mm-hmm. South Carolina, who's already said she's not interested.
Mm-hmm. What about Martinez? Has she said no as well?
I don't think she said no. But I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he has said a few things. He said he wants someone with some insider Washington, D.C. experience because mm-hmm. he's an outsider. He's not a politician. Mm-hmm. He said that there's about a 40% chance. I don't know where he gets that number, but there's a 40% chance he chooses someone who was in one of his opponents in mm-hmm. the presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, there are all sorts of names being thrown out there. You got former House Speaker Newt Gingrich being mm-hmm. mentioned.
Yep.
You've got Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, being mentioned. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different options. But when we talk about these names, a lot of these people don't want to be associated
yeah.
with Donald Trump.
Oren, last word on this before we move to Turkey.
Speaking of Turkey, so what Donald Trump has said about the U.S. allies, mm-hmm. you know, the foreign allies of the United mm-hmm. States are concerned to the extreme the way this campaign is going.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming to the United States mm-hmm. to express their concern. And they're speaking to reporters about it. I don't know that anybody can remember the last time this happened.
I can't.
Right. And even if we look back in history, I'm not sure that you know, mm-hmm. even past when we can remember.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to the chairman of the German Parliament's Foreign Policy Committee, and he came out and said, you know, Norbert Röttgen, he said that the United States has to give Europe a clear commitment in order for Europe to be able to make some of the changes that Donald Trump has been talking about in mm-hmm. terms of providing more money for their own defense. And he's saying that he's not seeing that commitment from
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That our Asian allies are extremely worried, and they're looking for a commitment from whoever's going to be the U.S. president.
Yeah, well, I can't blame them. Anyway, time for another break. We'll be right back with more issues in the news.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
All right. Welcome back. I'm Fred Barnes with Tim Mack and Orrin Durrell. Orrin, I'm going to start with you on Turkey. The prime minister had been in office 2 years, fired or forced out or let go or whatever by the president. And, you know, he had just negotiated this very favorable deal with the European Union, very favorable to Turkey, giving the Turks the right to travel all over Europe and so on. What's going on?
So what's happening in Turkey is basically a power struggle. And you have a President Erdogan, who has been consolidating power in Turkey. He's a former prime minister. He served 2 terms, was replaced by Ahmet Davutoglu, who just now announced that he's stepping down.
Mm-hmm.
But as president, so the presidency is usually kind of a titular figurehead type figure in Turkey. But Erdogan wants to change the constitution to give himself more power, basically, mm-hmm. to give the presidency more power. And Davutoglu has been resisting this. Now,
looks like he's lost out on that.
He lost out on that. Now, part of the tensions between them have been growing over this issue of the constitutional changes, for one, but also over other things that Erdogan has been doing. But before I get to that, probably the straw that broke the camel's back in the relationship was this particular deal that Davutoglu managed to negotiate with the Europeans, which involved Turkey taking back a million or more migrants and refugees that had been traveling across the Aegean Sea into Greece. And in return, their Turkish citizens would be allowed into the Schengen zone, mm-hmm. which is the visa-free travel district of Europe. Now, I think so.
Yeah.
Now, Davutoglu apparently didn't include Erdogan all that much in these negotiations.
Mm.
And he comes out looking very good because this is really good for Turkey and its economy. It's going to increase tourism and it's going to allow Turkish business people to mm-hmm. travel all over Europe. And that made him more of a threat to Erdogan. Now, they've been clashing. They've clashed in the past over Turkey's and Erdogan's shutting down of Turkish media organizations and launching corruption investigations against reporters and against political opponents. And even his handling of the Kurdish issue, where he started kind of basically resumed open warfare with the PKK, which is a terrorist organization. But there are questions as to whether whether Erdogan had to go the route that he did quite as forcefully
mm-hmm.
Right before elections, in which the party got a new majority. So Davutoglu has been kind of mildly critical or less than supportive of some of the things that Erdogan has done, and now he's out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Turkey's an American ally and a member of NATO, and this can be a very awkward situation. Tim, unless you want to add something about Turkey, I want to turn to Iraq and chaos in Iraq. Here you have a bunch of followers of a radical Shiite cleric actually storming into the so-called green zone where the parliament is, and there not only divisions between the Sunnis and the Shiites, but there are divisions in each of those groups, and then there are the Kurds. And I know what has been the big concern for the Obama administration and for U.S. foreign policy is that this makes it awfully hard to wage a war. That is a good bit of it is in Iraq against Islamic State.
Yeah, and there were setbacks this week in the war against ISIS with the death of an American Navy SEAL
mm-hmm.
who was fighting with Kurdish forces, I believe, and ISIS a small ISIS offensive managed to break mm-hmm. through those lines. The political chaos in the country is clearly not helping. But mm-hmm. I think the fact is that the war against ISIS is not particularly going well, not because mm-hmm. of political mm-hmm. divisions in Iraq per mm-hmm. se, mm-hmm. but because of a lack of aggressiveness or mm-hmm. or ambition by coalition forces to really mm-hmm. stomp out the threat. Obviously, Iraq needs to play a major role in this, but I don't think that there's a major, there's a significant political will to do that on all sides.
I want to read you, Oren, from a news story about this whole Iraq problem, and it says the White House is urging Iraqi leaders to move swiftly to create a central government that will bridge the sectarian divides and unite the country as it battles against Islamic State. I mean, they make it sound like, oh, you just have to bridge these sectarian divides, which have been around for years and years, and of course are there probably worse right now.
Look, we know how to beat the Islamic State. We've done it before, we the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually disagree with Tim. I think that the political divisions are key to what's happening there. And the reason I say that is because when this whole ISIS, Islamic State offensive began, there were Sunni tribal leaders standing up and saying, this isn't the Islamic State, this is a Sunni tribal revolution. And they were attaching themselves to the Islamic State because they felt that they were being mistreated by the Shia-led government of Iraq. If you don't deal with the political issues between the Sunnis and the Shiites in Iraq and give the Sunni leaders a feeling that they're listened to and that they're respected and that they have an equal voice in the government, then you're not going to resolve the issue with the Islamic State. When that happens, they will start working with the Iraqi military. Mm-hmm. They will have their own military units, and they will be able to overcome the Islamic State. The problem is that the Shiite leadership doesn't trust the Sunnis to have their own military units.
Yeah. You know, that they, I mean, these divisions have become close to permanent. Tim, I want to go back to an issue that still divides Democrats and Republicans in the United States, and that's when in 2011, I believe, President Obama decided to remove the final group of American troops in Iraq. It was about 10,000 were left. And they were all removed, not just the combat troops, but all of them. And the explanation was, well, we couldn't work out a deal with the Iraqi government on protecting them, and so they were not charged with criminal violations and so on, and have to go in Iraqi courts. Now, I've always thought they could have worked out a deal. Here you have the U.S. and this Iraqi government that's totally dependent on the U.S., and yet did President Obama and his administration make a mistake in that? Would it have made a difference if 10,000 American troops had been left?
I think the proof is in the pudding here, right? That he's now sending back hundreds of American troops in order to fight ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
That during the early days of the emergence of the so-called Islamic State, certainly there could have been some military assistance on the ground provided by the United States to push them back. In a more aggressive way than the airstrike campaign that we see right now. And had there been a residual force, I mean, who knows what would have happened?
Sure, we can't rewrite history.
But I can't imagine that 10,000 residual troops or 15,000 residual troops couldn't have been useful as an option at a time like that.
Oren?
Well, it's not only – I agree with that, but it's not just whether the troops are there, but the American engagement, you know, the fact that the troops were there shows an American – commitment and engagement, and they're kind of the glue that were keeping the Sunnis and the Shiites from going at each other's throats.
Mm-hmm.
When they left, the politics that were sort of that were already bad got worse in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and the treatment of the Sunni forces that were providing security in Western mm-hmm. Iraq. They stopped paying, the government stopped paying them. Well, mm-hmm. the Americans could have prevented that from happening.
Yes.
And I think I feel that that the Islamic State filled a vacuum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. That's all the time we have. Joining us today were Tim Mak, senior correspondent for the Daily Beast, and Oren Durrell, foreign affairs reporter for USA Today. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Wagner Roberts and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.